Greatest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, America's right-wing religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host.
And good evening to you, Bob. This is Doug McBurney sitting in once again from over at KGOV.com, host of The Worldview.
Yep. Hey, Doug, Israel's given us, well, not you and I, but they've given our government a cache of documents. You know the documents they captured in the raids of Arafat's compound?
That's when they went in and destroyed all his buildings. And
with that beautiful hole in the side of the...
That was awesome.
The prettiest hole I've ever seen. Yeah. And they went in, and so now those documents, like the invoices for the bombs to kill women and children,
right?
That Arafat paid those invoices,
right.
They've given our government copies of that whole cache of documents.
Well, now, I heard a commentator on CNN today who said that those documents are either, number one, they're either taken out of context, or number two, they're forged.
Right.
So she's got it covered both ways.
Right.
They're
so,
either...
Now, it could be that documents are forged, but
that
the problem
happened.
Is when those who defend the Palestinians, even in the light of that their entire culture has become a terrorist culture,
mm-hmm.
When your culture goes a certain direction, their religious leaders, their media, their government officials, their schools, and the people on the street, the moms and dads, grandparents, they're all defending targeting women and children.
Yeah.
So it's a terrorist culture. And people who are still defending that terrorist culture, they would reject any evidence. We had it on the floor of the Las Vegas Convention Center.
Oh, that's right. You're back from Vegas.
We had a great time at the National Association of Broadcasters.
Yeah, I heard you last night, you and Mike.
That's right.
It was good stuff.
We had a good time in Vegas on the Convention Center floor, and we filmed the video there live from Las Vegas.
Oh, man.
And we debate, I don't know how many people in the video, 20 people or so.
I heard that you were offering $100 to anyone who won a debate.
Yeah, anyone who won the debate, we came back with $100.
Oh, so usually when someone asks, did you lose any money in Vegas, they're talking about gambling.
Right.
But with you.
We couldn't even lose the $100.
Really?
And we did tell them that the odds were better in the casinos before they stepped up to debate.
By the way, folks, the number to call if you want to participate in the program, 1-800-8-NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. We can talk about Las Vegas or other things.
Mm-hmm. And, Doug, we...
Talk about that hole in the Palestinian...
You know, Bob and Yart Live, we're still like an underground radio show.
Sort of.
Here, we broadcast out of our studio in this underground bunker.
We're actually underground now.
In the foothills of the Rocky Mountains.
Right.
And we don't have a large staff. So when we went to Vegas for this broadcasters convention, we took our entire staff. So we did not update the website during the week, but thankfully, we're back, and tonight's show will be on KGov. And for people who wanted to hear what we're doing, we'll have that video, 1995.
Yeah.
They can order it live from Las Vegas.
Where Bob risks at least $100 every 5 minutes, right?
That's right.
Now, that's thrill
and
packed.
They wanted to know, well, who decides who won?
Ah, yeah, I was going to ask.
You're in Vegas. The house always decides. And a tie goes to the house.
And a tie goes to the house.
So you either take those odds or get out of here. And we had a feminist, I debated, and she was such a whining crank.
No, not a feminist.
Yeah, and at the end of it, so we debated, and it's as though she never realized there could be economic consequences to feminism.
Uh-huh.
It's as though it had never occurred to her.
Uh-huh.
How many millions of women have been hurt by feminism. At any rate, at the end of it, she said, well, this is not fair. why do you get to decide? Why don't I win the $100? Why do I have to? I said, look, you want to be a feminist? Get your own booth, get your own debate, get your own $100 and get off the stage. You want to be treated like a guy? Get off the stage.
Yeah, don't, no whining like a little girl here now. Right. Come on.
You want to be treated like a lady? Then we'll treat you like a lady. You want to be treated like another guy? Get out of here now, and start your own business.
Now, what did you debate the feminist about? Because I didn't get to hear that particular portion of the program because the powers that be were unable to hear the second half of the show here in Denver. So I feel like I'm missing out on half of all
the fun.
You
know, Denver hears only the first half over the air.
It's just sad.
Over the air. But that may change soon. We're working on
the
full broadcast, even live, because Denver gets a tape delay.
Yeah. Well, now, what did you and the feminists have to argue about, Bob?
Well, I tried to explain to her that when the feminists changed the laws, forcing the marketplace to pay women more, before that, our economy was a one-income, a one-paycheck economy.
Yeah.
So that every household survived on one paycheck.
Right.
And women could either go to work or stay home, whatever they wanted.
They had the choice.
But when the feminists changed the rules and literally changed the laws, then now tens of millions of women have been forced to go to work because today we live in a two-paycheck economy.
Oh.
And if you want to have a reasonably nice house and cars that don't break down and health care for your kids, you pretty much it's hard to do it on one paycheck.
Yeah.
And she could not comprehend that when the feminists changed the banking and the lending rules and the tax rules and the pay rules, how you pay wages, that what that did was people selling homes said, hey, wait a minute, now we can include two salaries when we figure out how much we're going to lend. We're going to up the price of these homes 30%.
Uh-huh.
And that's what they did. But she couldn't figure that out.
Wow.
Anyway, we had fun.
Well, Bob, you know, I have used that line of reasoning with feminist types before, and that's the only time I've ever been called a Nazi.
Oh, really?
Was when I said that feminism lowered the wages of men and forced women into the workplace.
Right, women who don't want to go there.
Right, right.
And so I explained to her, I said, and this one claimed to be a Christian, and I said, Jesus said that you could pay somebody whatever you want to pay because it's your money.
Yeah.
And what right? And she said she would sue me to pay her more. I'm paying a guy more because he has a wife and kids at home. She said she would use the government to sue me so I'd have to pay her more, which means I have to pay him less.
Of course.
Because I can't print the money.
No.
And I told her that Jesus said you're envious, you're selfish, and you would take from him and take from me by force. You're a feminism has made you selfish.
Well, I think that most feminists and liberals in general have no concept of how corporations generate revenue.
Right.
And they don't understand that it's not just a limitless revenue source that we can all sue into.
Right. Only the government prints money with impunity.
Right.
If the government is mandated to pay women the same as men in the same jobs, well, then they have to pay the men less than they were paying them.
Of course.
They have to. They have no choice. And as a result, all those men, their wives, are forced, not all, but so many are forced to go to work.
Yeah.
So the feminist, the selfish feminist, is hurting countless women. But they're either too selfish to care or too ignorant to figure it out.
Well, I think it's a combination of those are the top two problems.
Yeah.
Ignorance and jealousy.
1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278. You know, I heard Powell was saying he wants, talking to the former prime minister in Israel, saying he wanted the Jews to make concessions.
Yeah.
Arafat?
Yeah.
And he said, what are you going to give him? And he said, Netanyahu. Sorry. Netanyahu. He said that to Colin Pollup. We'll be back after this.
Why does God give laws in the Bible only to alter or repeal them later? Adam and Eve were vegetarians because God only gave them plants for food. But after the flood, God told Noah he could also eat every kind of animal. Then, through Moses, God limited Israel's diet to just clean animals. Yet, in the New Testament, God tells Peter to eat unclean animals. Why? God prohibited the death penalty in Genesis 4 and then required it after the flood. Countless details confuse believers who don't take the time to understand the overview of the Bible. Read Bob Enyart's best-selling manuscript, The Plot, and get a deep understanding of God and His Word. Order the plot for $29.95 plus shipping and handling at 1-888-8-ENYART. That's 1-888-836-9278. You can understand the big picture, so call now.
Let's start from the beginning. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. And that's where a lot of unbelievers start their argument. They think their ancestors were pond scum. No matter how much you want to agree with them, the Bible says we were created in the image of God. So do you know how to defend creation when someone calls it a fairy tale? What will you say to an evolutionist when he states, "We've been here for millions of years"? Get the information you need to make the evolutionists squirm in their chair. Bob Enyart has been a talk show host and a student of science for many years. He knows the evolutionary argument, and he knows that science proves there is a creator. Genesis Creation is a 6-tape audio album for $29.95. Give us a call today at 1-888-8-ENYART.
Welcome back, Bob Enyart Live, 1-888-8-ENYART, 1-888-836-9278. Doug, we'll go to the phones in a moment. But first, this, the UN has come out with their criminal court is now...
It's here.
The World Criminal Court.
Yes, they handed out the robes, I think, this morning on CNN.
Yeah, The Hague. It's going to be held in The Hague.
The Hague.
And... they will prosecute war crimes, mm-hmm. mass murder, and other human rights violations.
Other human... Okay, pack your bags, Bob.
We're going to The Hague.
We're going to the Netherlands.
Hey, you always want to go to Northern Europe. We're going to the Netherlands.
Every time you call someone a flaming homo on the air, they're going to have some some sexually ambiguous member of the International Criminal Court monitoring your broadcast.
If you disparage fruit on this show...
or fruits.
It'll be... it'll be considered a potential crime by the UN
World
Court.
Well, you know what that is all about, though, Bob, really?
What?
It really is about getting Ariel Sharon in front of the criminal court his alleged war crimes.
You think they'll indict Yasser Arafat?
No, of course not.
For paying the invoices for suicide bombers to target women and children?
I would consider that an other...
Come on,
at
that's
least
a
in
war
the other,
crime.
Yeah, I'd say it's a war crime.
At least in the other
it's
category.
At least in the other.
War crimes, mass murder, and other.
Yeah.
That's got to qualify as an other.
At least as other, and possibly as the other two as well.
So I imagine the UN is going to be indicting Yasser before the end of next week.
Yeah, maybe he won't go to France.
They've got something to do.
Right, maybe he won't go to France. He'll be put in a jail cell in The Hague waiting for trial.
Right. Okay, so let's go to Florida. 1-888-8-ENYART. Richard, speak your mind.
Hello, Bob. How are you doing?
Doing great. Doug's here, too.
Hello, Doug.
Hey, Richard.
How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, as a matter of fact. It's Friday.
Yeah. Hey, I want to ask you, Bob, a question. You know, Paul Crouch of the Trinity Broadcasting Network said, pandering to the Chinese communists, said, the motto of the early church was that of communism.
That's despicable he said that.
But I'm not surprised.
He's never been a rocket scientist.
What do you think about that?
He's an idiot.
But he's sort of right. In the beginning, he's right, but it's despicable that he said it because he doesn't know what he's talking about.
Yeah, there you go.
In the book of Acts...
If you take it at face value, it looks true, but truth, right?
Well, Richard, we've been saying this for years. And have you ever been to our seminars or read the manuscript, The Plot...
No, I have not.
Okay, well, this is what we say for years. We've said that because Christians don't understand the overview of the Bible, there are hundreds of important details that really stymie them and they get confused. Yep. They don't know how to explain them. And one of the details is that in the book of Acts, in the beginning of the followers of Christ, right after he rose from heaven, they started living in a commune where they sold all their private property. They sold their homes. They sold their lands. They gave all the money to the church, and the church gave to each as each had need. And this is what we say. Now,
First of all, is that communism?
That's communism.
It is.
That's communism.
Yeah, sure.
Is that the way Christians should live? No, that's a despicable way for us to live. We should not live that way. But why does the Bible present that? That was the way the early Christians lived right after Christ ascended. And it did all fall apart pretty quickly. Richard, are you familiar with that history, what happened to those in the communes in Jerusalem?
No, I'm not.
Well, let me tell you what happened. The text says very clearly and repeatedly that they sold their homes, they sold their lands, and they held everything in common. Mm. In fact, that's pretty much where Karl Marx got the whole idea from.
Yep.
And he uses the Bible to defend his Marxism.
I'd say this, Bob, too. Yeah. Just like it's preposterous to say that the early model of the church was communism, it would be like, you know, saying that tithes and offerings are somewhat like an income tax. I mean, it's way off, man.
All right. Oh, here we go. This ought to be interesting.
It appears you cannot say, you know.
It's a funny guy. Okay, now, Richard, I want to ask you a question.
Okay.
I want to put you on the spot because I'm able to utterly disassemble anybody who tries to argue that to defend communism today. Because
I'm not defending communism.
I know you're not, but Richard, I want to see if you are able to shoot down that argument.
Okay.
Here's the argument. The early Christians in the book of Acts sold all their private property and they held everything in common and they lived as communists. Now, therefore, that must be a good way for people to live. Now, how do you refute that?
Well, I think we are stewards of whatever God gives us.
Well, so were they.
Yeah.
And Peter, James, and John, those guys were pretty sharp, and the Holy Spirit concurred, and they told all their followers to sell their homes and lands and give the money and hold everything in common.
When you realize that everything really belongs to God, then
it
we're not
then,
bound by
it. It did then, and it still does now.
But God still grants us private property rights.
Absolutely. But we are not bound by anything materially. Materialism
okay, Richard, this is what you should say. Richard, you should say, you know what? I really don't know why they did that in the beginning of the book of Acts. That's what you should.
On.
Richard, if you would say that, you would go a light year ahead, I think, in your personal development.
Sometimes I don't know is the best answer because it gets you to the truth.
Right, because and that's how so many things in my life, I couldn't understand the Bible.
Yeah.
It seemed like it had so many, like this one example, so many confusing things.
Okay, where am I wrong in what I said?
You didn't answer the question. Okay, here's the question. Why did God want the early Christians to live like communists?
Why would God want the
Why did he? Not would he, because he did.
He
told
them followed whatever they did. Is the model that we should follow.
No, well, I'm not saying that. I'm asking you, why did they? If you know why they did, then you might be able to offer an argument why we should not. But if you don't know why they did, then the assumption is, well, we should all live like the early church.
Yes, we should.
No, we shouldn't.
Is that
why
your
not?
Answer, that we should?
I think we should.
Okay, well, then we should better, be communists.
You'd have been better off saying, I don't know.
Right, Richard.
So please, Bob.
That's my point.
Help him in.
Richard,
on.
You know what, Doug? I'm not going to answer the question on the show.
I am not going to answer the question.
And this is what I'd rather do instead. It's called bait and switch.
Okay, yeah.
We talked about it like we might answer the question, but we have answered it in a seminar called The Plot.
That's right.
And in a manuscript called The Plot. And not only that, but literally hundreds of difficult things. Let me ask, Richard, you want me to ask you a theological question?
I'll see if I know it. I'll tell you if I don't know it.
All right. The Apostle Paul says, this is like a two-part question. The Apostle Paul says that we should forgive one another because Christ has already forgiven us, those of us who are Christians. Does that make sense to you?
Yes.
That because Christ has already forgiven us, we should therefore be motivated to forgive others because he's our example.
Well, offenses are going to come.
But
we're still on this flesh.
All right, listen, this is a two-part question. So that makes sense to you. The second part is Jesus said something different. Jesus said, unless you first forgive your neighbor, God will not forgive you. Jesus reversed the order. Paul said, because Christ has already forgiven you, therefore you should forgive your neighbor if he repents. Jesus said, if you don't forgive your neighbor, God, the Father, will not forgive you. And those two seem to be different. They seem to contradict a bit.
I don't see whether there's a contradiction.
Oh, you don't?
Okay.
No.
And do you have an answer for why the early Christians were told to live like communists?
Because we're not supposed to be bound by materialism.
Okay, so then we today should live like they did. We should live like
communists. Absolutely.
Do you live like a communist, Rich?
We live under... we do not live under freedom. I mean,
we are not
in a free society.
Rich, you got to answer directly or I'm going to hang up on
Rich,
you.
Rich, here's
a direct question.
If given the opportunity, I would.
Hey, Rich, should Christians sell their homes and their lands and live in a commune?
Yes.
You're a goof. I got to say that. Okay, I just hung up on him.
Bob, that is the meanest thing I've ever heard done in Christian radio right there.
Oh, really?
That was just mean.
And that was so soft. I just called him a goof.
We got Bob on.
I didn't call him a blithering idiot.
No, Bob.
Okay, Doug, the Jews that lived like that in Jerusalem,
yes.
they were Christians. They believed in Christ, but they were all Jewish to start with.
Yes, they were.
They ended up starving.
I remember later on in the New Testament, Paul is like raising money for the starving brethren there in Jerusalem.
For the believers in Jerusalem, because communism doesn't work.
Didn't work out for
them. The world has to feed the communist countries because communism doesn't work. Because of human nature, it just doesn't work. And so it fell apart. And while the apostles stayed in Jerusalem, the elders... They were in Jerusalem. They all lived like communists. And then they all became poor and starving. And Paul would go to his Gentile converts, raise money, bring it to Jerusalem for the saints who were starving there.
Mm-hmm.
And then we find out that Philip split the scene. He went to Caesarea and got his own house. He said, I'm out of here because it's not working. Communism does not work. And God exalts private property in the Bible. He exalts it. In fact, he says, thou shalt not steal.
Steal what?
Which is the foundation of private property.
Amen.
Right. Thou shalt not steal decimates communism and socialism.
That's right.
It decimates it because there the governments take all the property.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, we're going to manage it. You can't. And God says to everyone, don't you dare move a property marker, God says.
Mm-hmm.
It's an abomination to take 2 feet from your neighbor. Mm-hmm. And what the communists do is they take it all. They say no one has the right to own private property. So Richard, he might be a lost cause.
No, he's not a lost cause.
No?
But hanging up on him may have been the first step.
First step to him waking up.
To him waking up and actually reading.
I don't really think it's likely.
No, I think he's going to read his Bible. And he's going to be shocked at what he finds.
He's going to be shocked to find... Okay. Now, and when he said there's no difference between Jesus saying, first you have to forgive, and then God will forgive you.
Right.
That's two steps. Step one...
First you forgive.
And step two...
God forgives you.
Right, which is a nice thing.
That's it. Works
Paul
out.
Said on two occasions, first... Christ has forgiven you.
Has forgiven.
Step one.
That's step one.
Step two, therefore you should forgive others.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit different.
They're very opposite.
But when Christians, here's what I think. Christians don't read the Bible because they're sort of afraid of it. Because they get to the book of Acts, they just start out and they're all living like communists.
What to do?
They said, well, I've been told that communism's bad and here's all the Christians living like communists.
Shut the book. I'm
right.
Done.
And then they get Jesus saying that you got to do these good works. You got to forgive others first before God will forgive you. And they think, how does that fit into the four spiritual laws? And it's the Roman road. I don't get it.
Yeah.
And so anyway, we've got a manuscript called The Plot, which helps somebody to answer not just those two. Really, in the big scheme of things, those two are pretty minor.
Yeah, there's bigger ones.
Hundreds of difficult passages that seem to contradict.
Sure.
What in the world do they mean? And once you really understand what the whole Bible's about, then you just eat those problems for lunch.
So that if Richard knew where the early church followers of Christ were in the overall story, in the overall plot, he might understand
why they lived like that, exactly.
At that time,
and then why it fell apart.
Yeah.
And then why the Apostle Paul didn't use the same model.
Paul didn't ask his followers to sell all their stuff.
No, he didn't say, sell your homes and your land and give me all the money.
No, he did not.
Hey, maybe Richard's right. Maybe we should say that here at KGov.
That's not a bad idea.
Okay, let's go back to the early
Acts. I think they do say that on the Trinity Broadcasting Network.
Well, that's a good point, but maybe we should try it out. People, you like the show, sell your home, sell your land, and send us the money. We're back with a live commercial. Doug, I want to tell people about the Book of Revelation.
The Book of Revelation.
Our albums. We have a two-album series.
Oh, yeah.
Volume 1. Do you remember the titles of the albums?
Let's see. The Seven Churches and the Seven Seals.
That's Volume 1.
That's Volume 1.
And Seven Trumpets and Seven Bowls.
Seven Bowls. That's where things volume get two. Really hectic.
Not to mention the Seven Thunders.
Don't even want to talk. Don't even want to mention the Seven Thunders.
No. Now, I want to tell the audience about something you know how a lot of law enforcement people, they're just real friendly with us in our ministry.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of Christian law enforcement from a federal judge, prosecutors, sure, investigators, sheriff's deputies, cops.
People who appreciate justice.
Yeah.
Appreciate this ministry.
And people in the Justice Department.
Yeah.
Who come to Denver to attend Denver Bible Church, mm-hmm, because the Bible's all about justice.
Yeah.
Well, a prosecutor, he was going to his church, and on Sunday nights, they're in the Book of Revelation.
Yeah.
And an investigator for some police force, I won't say which one.
Okay.
This investigator, he asked the prosecutor, "So what are you guys doing at your church?" And he said, "Oh, we've been studying the Book of Revelation." And the investigator, he's gone through all our materials, and he's a friend and a supporter of the ministry. And the prosecutor said, "We've been studying the Book of Revelation." The investigator said, "No, you haven't." And the prosecutor's a big shot.
Yeah.
He is the county prosecutor. Right. And the investigator is one of many cops.
Right.
And so the cop, and they have a friendly relationship. But the cop, the investigator is this really strong Christian with a great reputation in law enforcement. And so the prosecutor looks at him. He says, "We've been studying the Book of Revelation." And the investigator says, "No, you haven't." He says, "Why are you telling me no, we haven't? We've been studying it for a year." So the investigator said, "Well, then, what's it about?"
Oh, boy, that's a tough.
What's the book about? And the prosecutor says, "I have no idea. I can't figure out that book." And the Christian investigator said, "That's what I mean. You haven't been studying it." Yeah. You want to study the Book of Revelation? Call 1-888-836-9278. Order the 2-tape album on the Book of Revelation, and then you'll understand it. The prosecutor did it.
Yeah?
He ordered the tapes, and I got to travel there for a seminar.
All right.
A few months later, and I had lunch with the guy.
Yeah.
And he said, "Bob, I've listened to the whole series twice. I'm on my third time through. I finally understand the Book of Revelation."
Wow. Everything except the Seven Thunders.
Richard's gone. I hung up on
Richard. Richard, you hung up on Richard, a Christian brother seeking truth, Bob. Why would you not just give him the answer?
Yeah.
Any other Christian on the radio would have taken time to give Richard the answer he was seeking.
But, you know, sometimes people's attitudes, they don't want an answer.
Mm.
You know, I've been in conversations with people, whether it's me or the other person, and there's uncertainty, and somebody just wants to fight or argue versus somebody who really wants to understand. Mm-hmm. And if you show someone an apparent contradiction, and they say, "There's no apparent contradiction.
Well,
I don't see a difference between..."
That can be frustrating. Huh?
"One and two versus two and one."
Yeah,
I don't see any difference between that.
Yeah.
Or, and maybe, to my surprise, I thought Richard had called in to criticize TBN for letting, who was it, Paul Crouch?
Yeah, Paul Crouch. Say that Christians...
For him, he owns the network. For him to say, to defend the communists by quoting the Book of Acts. I thought he was going to criticize them.
Well, that's what you'd think would come from anyone listening to this show. That they would have the common sense to... They would hear that Christians should
but
be communists and a red
was,
flag should go up.
Was I wrong? 1-888-8-N-Yart or 1-800-8-N-Yart? 1-800-836-9278. We have it on tape. Was I wrong? Was he calling in to defend TBN?
Well, it seems like he was, Bob. I think he was. And you know why?
That blows my mind.
You know why I think this happens, Bob?
I think he changed his position in the middle of the call. Well,
now, that could be. And maybe he was a guy who just wanted to argue. But I've had this discussion with Christians before.
Yeah.
And Christians, number one, they're confused, like Richard, about why the early church lived like communists. Number one, they're confused about that. Right. And number two, they've been brainwashed by their pastors, teachers, priests, whoever they're listening to, that swamis, the desire, the swamis,
whoever Christians listen to these days.
They listen to a lot of people.
Right. Yeah.
They've been convinced that the desire for material possessions in itself is a sin.
Is bad.
The desire for private property is a sin.
And that is, that right.
And the preachers get up there and they said, what you should really desire to do is give all your money to me.
Right,
you know?
Right. And you know, there's the largest church in Korea, was it? Where the pastor said, I can look it up. I've got it. Al here, my other co-host, has the data.
Yeah.
But he said that Christ was coming back soon.
Ah,
yes. In fact, that's what the apostles said back then.
Yes, they did.
And they believed he was coming back soon. And he said, because he's coming back soon, you should sell your homes and your land and give all the money to the church.
Right.
He took in millions.
And it was his church he was talking about.
Yeah.
Right? The church generically.
And he gave the date. He gave the date that Christ would come back.
Right.
And the Lord did not come back.
Uh-oh.
So the government went to recoup the millions.
The Korean government.
I think so.
That's so cool.
In fraud charges, and he had spent it all.
It was the end of the world. What was I supposed to do?
Right.
I spent it all.
It was all gone. All the money was gone. So, you know what's interesting? That a minister today who says that exactly what the apostles said back then.
Right.
Jesus is coming back soon, so sell your homes, give us the money.
That is verbatim what Peter said.
Yeah, pretty right.
Sell all your possessions and give all the money. Don't even hold back a little bit.
Give us the money. If maybe they could hold back, but don't lie about it.
Don't lie about it, yeah.
And but today we call a minister like that a charlatan.
Right.
A scam artist.
A fraud.
Right. A snake oil salesman.
You're right.
And he's a criminal. But yet the apostles, that's what they did.
Yeah.
Why is it that, and they were righteous and they were correct in doing what they did.
Well, I think you said earlier that the Holy Spirit had inspired them to say those things.
Yeah, that's right.
To their followers.
And to put it in the Bible.
Yeah, and to put it in the Bible.
So pretty cool.
Well, so anyway, Richard, since Richard was hung up on, Bob.
Right.
You force him now to seek out the truth by cracking open his dust-covered Bible and trying to figure something out for himself.
Yeah.
And I applaud you for that. Better than just giving him the answer.
Right. Hey, we got some instant messages here at KGOV,
KGOV Live at AOL.com.
Right. And this from Indiana. What do you expect? Paul Crouch thinks communist Nelson Mandela is a great Christian.
Oh, that's just delightful. And that's not surprising.
That is a tragedy because Nelson Mandela, he's another terrorist.
A communist, a murderer, a terrorist.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. This is a comment about Eva, the evil lesbian.
No.
We won't get on to
She's been banished.
She has?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, we finished with her quite some time back.
Okay.
We're not accepting any more commentary on Eva because it's actually her, probably.
Eva, the evil lesbian.
She sends email commentary on herself.
Right.
Just so she can get mentioned.
All right, let's go to the phones. Michigan, Steve, speak your mind.
Yeah, Bob, I was just listening to your comments, and I thought that what you said about the early church you were talking about, at least what I got from it was that you implied they were wrong in living the way they did.
No,
and
they
They had just started, it was more like the incubation period where actually they were kind of smart because as the church grew in 70 AD when the Romans came in and destroyed everything anyway, they had already sold and given everything away. And Christianity then flourished throughout the whole world because they were scattered.
No, it didn't really work like that. Let's talk through. I see it, you know, and I admire what you're doing, and I do the same thing. You want to say that the apostles, they weren't lunatics, they weren't wrong, and they were following the leading of the Spirit beyond any doubt. But there was a specific reason why they did it. And the Apostle Paul, he was most likely dead long before meaning months or a few years before AD 70. And he didn't tell his followers to do the same thing. In fact, his followers were financially supporting the destitute Christians in Jerusalem.
Right.
Well, the Jewish Christians and the Gentile Christians at that time were... they lived a different way. I mean, I'm not saying it was right or wrong. I'm just saying the Jews, because of the way they were born were brought up in.
No, Steve, communism was never a part of Judaism.
No, I'm not saying communism. I'm not even using the word communism. Well,
yeah, but they did live as communists. They lived in a commune. They held all property in common, even their money. They sold all their private property and lived together.
Well, I know the disciples did, the apostles did, whether or not everybody else who went to synagogue and was under their teaching did that.
Yeah, they did. It's the book of Acts says it. You could read
all
it three times.
So probably a vast majority of their followers, maybe not every single one, but a vast majority did what they were told to do, sold all their possessions, gave it to the church, and Steve... that's communism.
But you know what I'm interested in, hey, Steve?
Well, no, communism is more of a centrally controlled government.
It was.
The apostles were saying.
Economically, communism is not a central controlled government. Communism is an economic system. You could have a democratic communist system, a monarchy.
We're talking about the apostles, and let's not even veer away.
Well, hey, Steve, just don't be afraid and don't feel bad to just come out and say that the early church and the apostles and their followers lived like communists. You can just say it. It's true.
I think they were Christians who were led by the Holy Spirit.
They were. They absolutely were.
And it worked out. The way God set it up, it worked out, because everybody who was in Jerusalem lost everything they had anyway.
Well, let me ask you a question.
Christianity flourished.
Christianity did not flourish because of the starving Christians in Jerusalem. Look, it flourished because
anything else to go back for, so they went into the world. They went forth and preached the gospel.
All right, Steve. The book of Acts, does the book of Acts say this, that the apostles stayed in Jerusalem when others were dispersed because of persecution? But the apostles stayed in Jerusalem.
They stayed in Jerusalem a long time, and they didn't leave until they had to.
But there's no record of any of the 12 apostles leaving Jerusalem and going elsewhere.
Well,
there's no historic record of that.
I've read books where they've been all over the world.
They went to Peking, and they went
to
Spain.
Peter died in Rome.
And the Mormons think that Jesus went to Peru. But Steve, if we take the Bible record, Paul evangelized the entire Roman world, and the Bible goes out of its way to say that the 12 apostles, although their numbers were being thinned out because they were being killed, that they stayed in Jerusalem. Even when some of their converts left Jerusalem, they stayed there. And when you say that it worked out, let me ask you a question. Did you have this, that it worked out? Would you agree that many of the most righteous people in the Bible were persecuted, imprisoned, killed, tortured? Terrible things happen.
Well, that's what the Bible says in Hebrews chapter 11 or 12.
Yeah, the Hall of Faith. Mm-hmm. And so by saying it worked out.
It worked out for the spread of the gospel.
When a prophet and an apostle, when they get killed, you could say, well, that worked out. But they might have said, I'd rather not be killed. I'd rather live another day to preach the gospel.
It was after they only died after they finished their ministry. Listen, like Peter or like Paul. Paul said, "I've come to the end of my race."
So are you saying that
there's still
this,
a
Steve?
God who has control Steve. Over when people live and die?
Hey, Steve, okay? I think you're getting a bit emotional, but that's all right.
Yeah.
Listen, are you saying that God wanted them to spread out, so he had to manipulate them by first making them poor? Because otherwise they wouldn't have obeyed his command to spread out. Is that what you're saying? We'll let you think about that over the break, and we'll come back 1-888-8-NYART.
Bob Enyart teaches the Bible like few others, and one of the best ways to introduce yourself to Bob Enyart's unique style of Bible teaching is with the video Mount Moriah. It's a 2-hour feature video that answers all kinds of questions about the resurrection. Is there evidence for the resurrection still in existence today? Well, this entertaining and professionally made video will show you evidence of Christ's resurrection that has remained for 2,000 years. It proves that 1,500 years after God carved the law in stone, he carved grace in stone at Mount Moriah, and you can answer those who ask, those who doubt the resurrection.
Most people choose their long-distance company right after they see one of their funny ads on TV. At Lifeline Communications, we think that you'll choose your long-distance company for an entirely different set of values. It's true that Lifeline's rates are now 12 to 27% lower than the competition, as low as 6.9 cents on weekdays and as low as 4.9 cents on Sunday. But we're the only major long-distance company which gives away 10% of its income to spread the gospel. And we're the only long-distance company recommended by thousands of major ministries all over America. Plus, if you switch right now, we'll give you 100 minutes of long distance free. So what do? If you're serious about saving money and promoting the kingdom of God, you can do both with Lifeline. Long distance with a higher calling.
Give him a call, 1-800-684-2931.
Bob's monthly Bible study. Join up, folks. Every Sunday night, we record a Bible study here in Denver, and we're going through the entire Bible. You can sign up for $24.95 a month. We send out 4 tapes a month every month. We distribute tapes right now to over 100 families around the country. Please join up. $24.95 a month. We can send them out automatically if you sign up by credit card. Give us a call, 1-888-836-9278. That's 1-888-8-NYARD.
Doug, an instant message here. This appeared in a Kokomo newspaper. While hunting deer, I encountered a group of people carrying signs that said PETA.
Uh-huh.
I thought it stood for "Please eliminate these animals," and I told them that was what I intended to do. So somebody sent that in. You know, in Boulder, we've got this chronic wasting disease.
Yes, I heard about
in
that.
In the deer population, and that's akin to mad cow disease.
Yeah, and they killed 1,700 elk had to be slaughtered.
Where was that?
In the foothills outside of Boulder.
Oh, I didn't read that. Yeah. Elk?
1,700 elk were killed by the state of Colorado this week.
Now, the deer, the city of Boulder being liberal, they voted to disallow the State Division of Wildlife from killing any deer in Boulder.
Oh, so maybe they didn't kill any in Boulder.
Well, maybe that was outside of, I'm not sure about the elk, but this is the deer story.
Oh.
And they had voted to not kill any deer, and so the Division of Wildlife killed the deer just on the border, and they found the highest infection rate out of any in the West. Oh. So Boulder turns out to be a hot spot of this chronic wasting disease, which is like mad cow disease.
And does this affect old hippies, or are you talking about right. animals?
About animals.
Oh, because I've known some folks in Boulder who...
You know, the animals, they don't know where it came from. It might have come from the hippies.
Yeah, actually, if you met some of the people I've met in Boulder,
maybe that's why it's a hot spot for the infection rate. So anyway, now Boulder has changed.
They're going to go ahead.
They've conceded. Because this could be a disastrous epidemic.
Sure.
Look what's happened in England. And if it starts jumping to humans, if it jumps to domesticated cattle. In fact, look at this. The cover of today's Rocky Mountain News.
Yeah, yeah.
The headline is interesting.
Yeah.
The probe questions Columbine death.
Columbine death.
Remember Jefferson County asked El Paso County to investigate Danny Rohrbaugh's death.
Right. The two mayors or whatever who went to school together. Or, who knows? Yeah. They're like old buddies.
Yeah, the two sheriffs. And Danny's parents say that Danny was not killed by Harris or Klebold, but by a law enforcement officer.
Right.
So Jeffco has this story of how Danny died, where Klebold, he was shot. He fell to the ground. Klebold, a minute or two later, walked up and killed him at close range. Shooting into his body.
Right, that's the official report.
Right. Here's the headline. Probe questions Columbine death. Report refutes Jeffco version of Rohrbaugh slang.
Wow.
That's pretty strong.
Report refutes?
Refutes. Now, we don't know all the details of the report, but we do know that they have said that Danny was not shot and killed in the manner that Jeffco says he was.
Wow.
So by looking at the evidence, I still think it's pretty clear that Danny was shot by a cop and O'Shea in Denver.
By accident.
By accident. And so anyway, but under that headline, Columbine death is a huge photograph, a color photo of three women who
weeping.
Are so depressed.
They're weeping. They look like they're weeping.
Right.
Perhaps at a funeral.
They're devastated. They're mourning. But the picture has nothing to do with the Columbine death. These are not family members. These are three women in Boulder, and they're mourning because the Division of Wildlife now has permission to kill some deer because this disease is spreading throughout the herd.
So that's what they're mourning over is the deer?
I'm showing our studio audience right now. They're just devastated, these women.
That is just sad.
That some deer, and the deer are dying anyway. And we're trying to save the deer.
They're going
to
die of chronic wasting disease.
But animal rights imbeciles would rather every last elephant in Africa die than let anybody hunt them and raise money to make sure they survive.
That reminds me of something that you brought up last week, Bob.
What?
That liberals love to say save the whales.
Right.
Right? And they don't really care about humans.
Right, because a whale, I said because save the earth, because the earth is never going to knock on your door at 2 a.m. on a Saturday night drunk. Save the whales, because a whale's not going to throw up on your couch.
And so
liberals have these very safe causes.
Yeah. Well, listen, this generated an email. I don't know if you got a chance to get this one while you were in Vegas,
no.
But they CC'd me on it because I happen to have participated in that program. This is from Dan. He says, Bob, if you did have a whale puke on your couch... He said, save that whale vomit and take it to the market.
What?
That's what he says. He says, whale vomit may or may not contain ambergris.
Ambergris?
Yeah, you know, ambergris.
Oh.
You know, like you get down at the market?
Ambergris.
No? Ambergris, he says Dan, is a gray cheese-like waxy substance that is formed naturally in the intestine of the whale and vomited forth. He says it's normally found... floating on the sea or washed up on shore, it is valuable to perfumers as a fixative for essences.
Oh, isn't that a fixative? So when they have the fragrance just how they like it.
Just how they want it.
They get some whale to throw up on it.
It stays.
And it locks it in place.
Forever Elizabeth Taylor.
Right.
You know?
How does that work? Do we have any chemical engineers in our studio audience? Any chemical? Chemical?
Chemical engineers?
Are you?
Have him look into ambergris.
Oh, you're still getting your degree in chemical engineering. Maybe after the show you can let Doug and I know how that works, how whale vomit is used in women's perfume.
Yeah.
No wonder they call it toilet water.
This is the first radio program that has ever generated any discussion of whale vomit anywhere outside the perfume industry.
That's right.
So this is like a first.
Anywhere in the world, here or in the Permian Basin.
We're breaking new ground. By the way, the number to call if you want to participate is 800-836-9278. That's 1-800-8-NYART. If you want to get in on the show. But Bob, I wanted to get, there's another story that was in the USA Today. And it was in the USA Today, I believe it was.
Not today.
Well, it was over their weekend edition.
All right.
Their big, fun, full-color weekend edition.
Yeah.
Listen to this, Bob. You're going to love this. This is all about airline pilots. The nation's five largest pilot unions have asked President Bush to intercede personally to let pilots arm themselves aboard commercial jets.
Now, aren't these pilot unions great? That's exactly what we called for. The day of 9/11.
Right. On September 11th.
September 11th. We had it on the web in print and in audio, and on, September 12th.
Yeah, and on the Information Radio Network.
Right. Our very first, you had all these politicians lamenting, in a free society, there's no way to stop things like this.
Yeah.
Well, how about put a gun in the cockpit?
How about that?
One gun in every cockpit in September 11th would not have happened.
That's right.
They may have tried something else, but you could not have commandeered four commercial aircraft and flown them into buildings.
No, not using box cutters.
Right. One gun in every, and it's a little more difficult to get machine guns onto a plane.
Yeah.
I mean, not all that hard from what we've seen lately, but a little more difficult than getting just a knife.
Yeah. Well, Bob, USA Today, now they say a couple interesting things related to this story.
Yeah.
The appeal to the president is an unprecedented show of solidarity. It's five different unions representing 114,000 airline pilots come together for this one issue in unanimity, asking the president to step in. Mm. Now, but in they also say some aviation experts say that guns would create new hazards from distracting pilots to accidental discharge or theft.
Distracting pilots.
Yeah, like a gun is going to distract the pilot.
I can't quite figure that. I guess if he's like target practicing the window.
I was going to say.
There's some American Airlines jet going by and he's pointing at the pilot.
That could be just, but you know, pilots are generally pretty good at multitasking. Multitasking,
yeah.
Even.
And but you know what? They need a little distraction in the cockpit.
No kidding. It's
because
boring.
And along with law enforcement, we have so many pilots who are friends of this show. I don't know why.
Yeah.
But for different airlines, United, Continental, and they tell you in private how, what a boring job it is. You have to be prepared and trained for the emergency.
Right.
But other than that, they feel like they're driving not even a bus driver.
Yeah.
But it's like a bus driver.
It's like a bus driver where the cruise control is really cruise control.
Right.
You can go to the bathroom.
Right, but it's not like a bus driver because a bus driver has to steer.
Right.
They don't have to steer. No. It's more like a train engineer.
Right.
You're on the tracks because they have autopilot.
Right.
And they even have auto brake.
Oh, yeah.
When they land, one of the hardest things of landing is braking just right. They have auto brake. They have all these auto functions, and a little distraction in the cockpit would actually be good to keep the cop.
Although
the pilots,
we wouldn't encourage target practice unless the cockpits were properly reinforced,
or if they could open a window and shoot out
at the birds
over the ocean,
moving targets
at the birds.
Well, listen to this, Bob.
Yeah,
President George W. Bush says arming pilots is unnecessary because of improvements in security, such as fortified cockpit doors and better screening.
Right. Now, we've seen that firsthand.
Have you had a chance?
That stuff really works.
Yeah.
Well, in the media is constantly telling us the stories of everything getting through.
I'm hearing them every day.
You know, I hate to tell private, personal stories on a syndicated radio show, but we just got on the plane in Las Vegas to fly back to Denver.
Yeah.
And there was a sign when they're going to screen you, and it says, put loose coins on belt. That's what it says.
Put loose coins on belt.
And I thought, that's rather weird.
That would be
I've never seen that before.
Quite a treat.
And so in the belt, you figure it can't be one long continuous belt.
No,
it's got to fall through somewhere.
There's several. They're
probably collecting money under the screening machine.
Well, if you see the looks of some of these screeners, they could use the change.
Right.
These people are.
Although their hourly wage just went from $7 to $12 an hour nationwide.
Woo-hoo.
But I don't think they're $5 an hour better.
I
had two quarters in my pocket.
Yeah.
Because I hadn't yet got to the slot machines. They were in the concourse.
Right.
No, not really. I just had two quarters in my pocket. So I put them on the belt. And I thought, this is stupid. I saw my two quarters going into the machine.
Yeah.
They're going to x-ray them. So it comes out the machine on the other side, which I was relieved to see. And then where it meets up with another belt,
right,
they fell through the cracks. And I said to the people working there, I said, my quarters fell through. And they said, you're not supposed to put the quarters on the belt.
Well,
I said, the sign says, put your loose chain. It said, put loose coins on belt. They said, well, that means in the gray tubs.
Oh, yeah. Oh, in the gray.
So Jason Troyer and I said, there are no gray tubs. And they said, well, there normally are. Well, there's not now. You guys need a new sign and new gray tubs. But that's the kind of, I couldn't work at a place that was irrational on the signs.
Well, in the meantime, while you were having that discussion, you know, the guy made off with your two quarters
while
you were arguing about it.
That's right. So Bush thinks we've already achieved the level of security we need.
Yeah.
And, you know, if a pilot has to go to the bathroom, that bar across the door, that's not going to help much.
No, that's
because he has to go through the door.
He has to open the door.
So somebody in first class who wants in, just, you know, the pilot's got to go.
Well, I think
he's got to go.
I think that the liberals would rather have the pilot soil himself than be able to carry a gun.
That's true. And what's so terrible, it's the jihad against guns.
Yeah.
Bush is supposed to be conservative. Why shouldn't he say one gun in every cockpit would have prevented 9/11?
That's what he should say.
Why doesn't he say that?
It goes down like a great line, like a chicken in every pot.
Right.
A gun in every cockpit.
That's right.
It would have been memorable. It would have been sensible. It would have been logical. And it would definitely prevent attacks at far greater expense and with a lot more efficacy.
Hey, Doug, and Benjamin Netanyahu was
one of my favorite guys.
U.S. senators this week.
Yeah,
and he showed a blown up map of the Middle East.
Yeah,
and this is the Palestinian map.
The Palestinian map.
This is Arafat's map.
The Palestinian version. Lebanon,
Israel, the West Bank, Gaza. What? It's all gone.
Yeah.
Gaza's not shown. The West Bank is not shown.
No, they're not.
Israel's not shown.
Israel's gone.
It's only Palestine.
It's all Palestine.
The whole this Bob Bennett reminds you to do right and risk the consequences. Do right, do right.